Tonight is Wednesday night, January 30th. This is the Women's Gemara Share. We're starting a new sugya tonight in Masecha Sukkah called Mitzta'er Patim in HaSukkah. Okay, Rabotai. Thus far this year, we have covered two major topics which have their point of departure in Masecha Sukkah. The first one was Mitzvah Habah Baveira, and the second one was Osek B'mitzvah Patur Min HaMitzvah. And both of them have broad applications above and beyond Masecha Sukkah. And as I said, we used Masecha Sukkah as the point of departure because the Gemara does so. Tonight we're going to begin another sugya, which is known as, it starts out as a local sugya only related to Masecha Sukkah, but there is a titanic debate amongst the Rishonim: can we apply this particular halacha that we'll discuss tonight to all other mitzvot? And the topic is Mitzta'er Patur Min HaSukkah, that somebody who is experiencing some type of agony, is in tsa'ar, some degree of pain, either physical or mental anguish, is exempt from the mitzvah of sukkah. So we're going to examine its parameters as it applies to the mitzvah of sukkah, try to define it properly, and then see whether or not there is legitimacy to apply this to other mitzvot. And I'll give you a couple of interesting examples of which various achronim have applied this particular principle to other areas other than in Masecha Sukkah, which, as opposed to the other two topics, are discussed in other Gemaras, Osek B'mitzvah and Mitzvah Habah Baveira. This topic is only discussed in the context of Sukkah, so it requires much greater courage to say, you know what, I'm going to apply to something that has nothing to do with the mitzvah of Sukkah. So, we start on page number one, and as I said this afternoon for the Chumashir, all the pages are in order, nothing about defense. There's nothing going on in sports these days until after the Super Bowl. Then next week we will have our... But that's in 2 weeks, okay. Not next week. Pitchers and catchers.
There's just a lot of injustice and unfairness in sports now with all the calls that...
I know, but what should I do? Put a referee's number on the page? That's all? I know. Well, the fans in New Orleans are suing the NFL that their team didn't get in because it was a blown call. It's happened, a long time. Ask Yogi Berra in the 1947 series when he swears for the rest of his life from 47 until he died in 2000 something, that Jackie Robinson was out on his attempted steal of home plate and the umpire blew the call. And that was it. And he grants, it happens. Blown call, a part of the game. Okay, so we're starting in the middle of the page. In the middle of the page, the second bracketed lines, the second set of bracketed lines on, this is Masecha Sukkah, Daf Chav Vav Amud Aleph. Tanu Rabbanan, we learned in a Braita. The Mishnah had said, and it's indicated in the two words in the previous line, which says, Cholim Umisham Shehem are exempt from Sukkah. Somebody who is ill, and anybody attending to the ill person, is exempt from the mitzvah of Sukkah throughout the entire 7 days. So the Braita is going to elaborate on this statement of the Mishnah. Tanu Rabbanan, we learned in a Braita. Chole Sha'amru, that which the Mishnah states, that a chole is exempt from sukkah, lo chole shiyesh bo sakana. It is not referring to a person who is ill and is in danger of losing his or her life. Because I don't need a Mishnah to tell me that if they're in danger of losing their life, of course they're exempt from the mitzvah of Sukkah. They're exempt from every mitzvah of the Torah. Ela afilu chole
she'ein bo sakana. Even a chola for which there is no threat of loss of human life, such a person is exempt from the mitzvah of sukkah. Now, it's important to actually define what constitutes a chola she'yesh bo sakana. There are hundreds of things that Dr. Tova sees every single day, and none of them are life-threatening situations. So what constitutes a chola she'yesh bo sakana to grant any type of an exemption in relationship to sukkah? Does it mean I have a little sniffle, a little cold? Does it mean I have a bad headache? What is the criteria of a chola she'ein bo sakana? So it doesn't really give us a definition. We have to create one by using some of the examples that are given. So for example, in a second, the Gemara says, afilu chosh be'einav. His eyes are bothering him. Chosh berosho. His head is bothering him. So does that mean if you have a little headache, I'm exempt from the mitzvah of sukkah? So the way most like to define this, it means that I am ill enough to interrupt my regular daily routine. I can't accomplish my daily routine. So if my daily routine is on a Tuesday, what do? I go to work. Well, if I can't go to work because I have such a terrible splitting headache, that would exempt me from the mitzvah of sukkah if that Tuesday was the first or second day of Sukkot. If it's a Shabbat and I'm not going to work, but I have such a terrible headache that I can't go to shul. So my regular routine on Shabbat mornings to go to shul. If I can't go to shul that morning, that is considered a chole she'ein bo sakana, for which our Gemara will apply the standard. I'll give you other such illustrations of a chole she'ein bo sakana where certain restrictions are removed. There is a difficult prohibition to swallow, and that is taking pills, medication on Shabbat. It's a difficult one to understand. And the reason why it was prohibited is because in the time of the Talmud, every single prescription had to be ground freshly. And they didn't want to allow grinding is tochein, and they didn't want to allow violating on Shabbat a deoraita, a biblical prohibition, because somebody has a headache. Of course, if it was a life-threatening situation, of course you're allowed to grind the medication. So it's a gzera. For hundreds of years, people have not been grinding their own prescriptions in their house, and you don't have to worry about that. Pharmacies have been taking care of this. Maybe in the Rambam's time, the Rambam told you what the prescription was, and you went home and grind up the ingredients, the herbs and the spices, whatever he concocted, and that's what he did. Today, so it's a little difficult to tell people, I can't down a pill, because the pharmacist might grind it on Shabbos. He doesn't grind it on Shabbos in any event. So it's a little difficult. However, there are basic leniencies with this gzeirah, that if it is a chole she'ein bo sakana, defined as, and I'm going to use the Hebrew expression, chole she'nafal l'mishkav. He's bedridden. He can't function. He can't go to work. He can't go to shul. So he has to lie down. The isur dirabanan against taking medication is automatically suspended. It has a lot of liberty, but we use this definition to suspend the isur midrabanan against taking medication. Similarly, we suspend the rabbinic prohibition of amira l'nachri, asking a Gentile to do something for us if it's on behalf of a chola. And again, if it's a chola sheyesh b'sakana, I don't have to ask a Gentile. I can do it myself. In fact, it's preferred that I don't ask a Gentile, that I be mechal Shabbos myself if it is a life-threatening situation. And however, if it's not a life-threatening situation, I can't desecrate the Shabbat, but you're allowed to ask a Gentile. So this definition, which we employ here, is also used in accommodating other situations. But that's only in the one example of which we will speak about in the category for tonight. The category is mitzta'er, I'm in agony. An agony doesn't necessarily have to be because I'm ill. The Gemara will give a couple of illustrations, like there are too many bees flying around in the sukkah. I just can't take it. Too many mosquitoes in the sukkah, and I just can't take it. It's too cold to sit in the sukkah. Or more in recent years, it's too hot to sit in the sukkah. I once visited Michal in Boca on sukkahs. It was impossible to sit in the sukkah. It was brutal. Had to go out. It was impossible to sit there. It was so burning hot. Impossible. So you mentioned rain. Good. We're going to talk about rain, which would be an obvious one. But we will see the Vilna Gaon says that rain is a separate category, not necessarily, even though some agree with you that rain is one of the illustrations. The Gaon believes that rain is a separate category, and it has enormous halach import, which we will get to, probably not tonight. So that's the broad definition. Omar Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, said Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, Pam achat chashti be'enai b'kesari. Once, during the Yontif of Sukkos, my eyes were bothering me when I was in Kesaria for Sukkot. Vehitir Rab Yossi beribi lishon. What does it say? You can't even see it. No. Ani umisham shai chutz l'sukkah. Ani. And this Rabbi Yossi Berebi, who was the local posek in Kesaria, went and said, he told me, neither I nor any of my attendants, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel was the Nasi, and he had various attendants, they're all allowed to sleep out of the sukkah because his eyes were bothering him. So just as a side, parenthetical remark, Rab Shimon ben Gamliel was smart enough to answer that question himself. But when you are in someone else's town, and that person is the Rav HaRashi of that town, you are supposed to direct all of your questions to that individual, even though you're a genius. And quite frankly, Rab Shimon ben Gamliel was much more well known than this Rab Yossi Berebi, who was not Rab Yossi was a very famous, but Rossi Berebi is not terribly well known. But he was the local Rav of Kesaria, and therefore he demonstrated respect for him by saying, "I have a headache, and I want to ask you if I am permitted to sleep out of the sukkah or not." I remember very well when the Rav passed away on Chol Hashamoed Sukkos in 1993, Rav Aaron Lichtenstein asked Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach whether he should rip Kriya or not. A son always rips Kriya for a parent when they die on Chol Hashamoed. You don't sit Shiva, but you rip Kriya. Rav Aaron was not a son of Rav. He was a son-in-law of the Rav, but his primary Rebbe was the Rav. And the halacha is that when your Rebbe dies, you're supposed to rip Kriya as well. You're supposed to rip Kriya. So the question was, should he, as a Talmud, rip Kriya on Cholosho Moed? Because on Cholosho Moed we normally minimize Avelut, and we restrict certain aspects of the Avelut just to the mourner, who are the legal mourners, those are the children, siblings, and so on and so forth. But in this particular case, now Rav Aaron knew the halacha, trust me. But he always made Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach as his posek. And he called him on the day he found out, because that's the appropriate thing. When the Mishnah says, Asay Lecho Rav, it's not only talking to ordinary citizens, it's talking even to Rabbanim, they too should have a Rav. Today, when you get smicha, you get a phone number. Used to be, it was either Rabbi Shech's phone number, the Rav's phone, now you give your Rabbi Shechta's phone number in YU. So you should know who to call in case you're stuck or need guidance, but certainly. So Rav Shimon Gamliel did that. But what example did he give? He had, his eyes were bothering him. Rav, next line, Shara l'Rav Acha Bardala. Rav allowed, Shara is allowed, l'Rav Acha Bardala, that was his name, Lemikna bechilta besuka mishumbaki. He allowed him to sleep in a canopy of a married couple. A canopy. There used to be a practice that when a new couple got married, they would sleep in a big bed and it would be covered with a netting, in order to make sure that the mosquitoes don't get hold of them. Now, it's not, that's called kilat chatanim, the canopy for the what? For the chatan. That's what they did, they put on their beds. Now, a whole year, that's not a halachic problem. The problem is, on Sukkot, you are not permitted to have a double roof over you. You have to be sleeping and eating and living underneath the schach. This canopy, if it is at least 10 tfachim high off bed level, 10 tfachim, 40 inches, because that's the height of what we considered a wall, a machitza, and it has it's not just that it comes to a spitz, a point at the top, but it's like flat on the top. That halachically constitutes its own roof. And therefore, you are not sleeping directly underneath the schach, you're sleeping underneath a roof, which is under the roof of the schach. So Rav allowed this person who was worried about the mosquitoes to sleep in the sukkah, despite the fact that what? He's not really fulfilling the mitzvah of sukkah. So, what question would you ask immediately, and we will discuss this. What question would you ask? No, he is mitzta'er because of the mosquitoes. So, what alternative would you have suggested in light of what I said? Go to the house. Why are you staying in the sukkah and putting up a canopy? And just go into the house, and that's it. So, we will talk about it. We're going to see that there is actually a debate whether such a canopy disqualifies your mitzvah of sukkah or not.
But once there's bees in the sukkah, you don't immediately say, okay, I could go inside. You first try to see if you could do something. No?
Well,
like get rid of bees. Like he's
right, okay, correct. If you can get rid of them, that's fine. But if you can't get rid of them, and usually we don't have very good... You have good luck getting rid of the bees in the sukkah? I know, because I don't know. Good, you're lucky. We're normally not infested with bees. Or even with mosquitoes, terribly not. So, I haven't heard too many of those cases recently. But if it should happen, you live in, you're in North Africa or something like that, where you're going to have lots of mosquitoes lying around or something, you're in a jungle, that those things are going to happen. Fine.
It's a sakana because you could get malaria.
Yes, okay, okay. A third illustration. Rava Sharile L'Rav Acha Bar Ada. Rava allowed Rav Acha Bar Ada L'Migna to sleep bar mi mitalalta, outside of the sukkah, mishum sircha digargishta. The floor was smelling, had a terrible odor. Okay, so what else is considered mitzta'er according to this? We'll talk about the details a little later. Foul smell. So what question should you immediately ask? Which everybody does. Why did he build the sukkah in a place where it has a foul smell? You can't do that. You cannot set up a sukkah in a place which it's going to be exposed to something which will say, oh, now I can't sit in the sukkah. For example, there are, wind tunnels. So I'm going to build my sukkah in a place where there's a huge wind tunnel. And then I come to first, oh, it's freezing here. I'm going inside. Can't build a sukkah. So why did he build a sukkah on a place where there was... So there's some discussion about that. But it's not my concern, at least not yet. My concern is simply to illustrate something which is well above and beyond illness, pain in the neck, such as mosquitoes and things like that. This is just a bad smell. So put up with the lousy smell. The halacha says you don't have to put up with the lousy smell. These are all illustrations of what we call mitzta'er.
Wasn't that what we had said? If you were in your house and you're in a room and there was a bad smell, so you would leave that room.
Good. So that's going to be part of our discussion tonight. What is the basis of that halacha? And what you said is the primary explanation, even though we will see two others tonight as well. So just two more lines of the Gemara. Rava, who issued this ruling about leaving the sukkah because of the poor smell, litta'ameh. Rava is in agreement with something else that he said. It's good that he agrees with himself. It's not very good when you argue with yourself. The Amar Rava, mitzta'er pater min ha-sukkah. Somebody who is in agony is exempt from sukkah. The Mishnah never said that. The Mishnah only gave an illustration of somebody who was ill. Cholim are exempt. Not somebody who was in agony. That is not true.
Isn't that a way of being sick?
No, I'm not. I have a bad smell. That's not sick. I'm not sick.
No, someone in agony is
no, but I'm using the word agony exaggerated. I'm not physically in agony. I'm in agonizing because of the smell. Oh, it's terrible. It's terrible. So the Mishnah immediately attacks Rava. For ho'anan tenan, we learned in the Mishnah, cholin u'misham sheyem peturim min ha-sukkah. Only somebody who's ill, not somebody who's worried about some mosquitoes, not somebody who's worried about a foul smell. Cholin u'misham sheyem peturim min ha-sukkah. Inference, chole in mitzta'er lo. You should infer from the Mishnah that allows only a chole, that it's only a chole. But somebody simply agonizing should be obligated to live in the sukkah. Answers the Gemara. Lo, don't come to that inference. Amri, chole hu umishamshav piturin. Mitzta'er hu patur mishamshav lo. When it comes to the chole, even those attending to the chole, even though they are not sick, the attendings are exempt from sukkah as well. But somebody who is the mosquitoes are getting to him, well, if his servants, his attendants, are not terribly upset, they're laughing on their thing, that's ridiculous, they have to eat in the sukkah. He does not. Same thing if it's too cold. The other guys say, it's not that cold in here, so they have to eat in the sukkah. By a chole, his attendings are exempt from sukkah, regardless whether they are not, they're perfectly healthy. That's the only difference between a chole and a mitzta'er. So the Mishnah limits the case to a chole, not because we should infer that mitzta'er is not exempt, he is exempt. So why does the Mishnah list only chole? Because the mishamshin, the assistants, the help, whatever you want to call them, the servants, the help, are exempt in all cases with chole, and are not exempt because of a mitzta'er, unless they personally are mitzta'er as well.
Is that just straight logic? Because if they're chola, then they need their mishamish when they go inside. They need the person to sense them. If they're mitzta'er, they don't have.
That's probably logical. Yes, but you could have said that the chola, the mishamshim should get, and if the chola needs something, he should call them.
Yeah, but we want to make sure the chola has okay. what he needs.
Yeah, that, you know. Okay, but we're not, again, who are we talking about? A guy with a headache. We're not talking about somebody who's, you know, who has a nurse because he can't take care of himself. You know.
I have an issue with that whole thing. It reminds me. It reminds me of all the kids who come in. I need to know for school. I have a headache, or I.
And you're the one who gives it to them.
I don't. Sure. I say you have to go to school.
Good.
The point is, that's what I feel the Rebbeim should say. In other words, you know, we all know everyone gets aches and pains. Everyone gets headaches. Everyone is, you know, some people are more.
Good. Very good. Right? I agree with you. It is.
This is a mitzvah.
Correct.
Right?
So correct.
And yet. I'm not saying that someone who really feels ill, good. Even if it's not a sakana, but it sounds like it's so light.
I grant you that. Right. And therefore, we're going to struggle to see where did they get this leniency? And maybe, as I said earlier, it's limited only to sukkah. Or are we going to start expanding to other mitzvot as well?
Why even sukkah?
Okay, so let's see. That's what we have to discuss.
It's pouring out. It's very hard to sit in the mitzvah.
What?
But it's pouring out.
Yes, of course it is.
And that I think should agree that's a different category. Mm-hmm.
That's a good question.
Still stay in the sukkah.
Let us see how they derive this. Yes.
You keep using the word agony. But, like, isn't it also possible to explain mitzvah as uncomfortable or discomfort?
Yes.
Because agony to me is an extreme.
Good. You're right.
Okay.
Because I always use it because tsar right. normally means pain.
Right.
Tsar balei chayim.
Right.
Now, tsar is pain. But you're 100%. A more correct translation of mitzvah is I'm uncomfortable.
Right.
Exactly. That is correct. Mm-hmm. You are 100% correct. Yes.
Like
you know me, I like to exaggerate things.
Like if someone has a panic attack from being near bees, that's a different story
right.
than someone...
That's correct, who just doesn't want to be... Yes. So now, I just want to go to page 2 for a second. And I want to explain the psak of Rav, who told the guy with the mosquitoes to sleep in the sukkah, even though he's not fulfilling the mitzvah of sukkah. Well, what kind of... Just don't go inside. What kind of ridiculous is that? So, in the Gemara in Maseches Sukkah, on Daf Yud Aleph Amud Aleph, I bracketed on the top, this is the standard opinion, Hayoshein Bikila B'sukkah Lo Yatza Yidei Chovato. Somebody who sleeps in this canopy in a sukkah has not fulfilled his or her obligation. That's the generally accepted opinion. However, there is one minority opinion who disagrees, and I bracketed it right below, a couple of lines later. Dorash Rabba Barav Huna. Rabba, the son of Rav Huna, said, Mutar lishon bekila. You are permitted to what? To sleep under the netting over your bed. Af al pi shiyesh lo gag. Even though it has a roof effect. Af al pi shigvoa hasara. Even though it is at least 10 tfachim high. And a tefach is 4 inches, that's 40 inches. That's the minimum requirement of a wall. So the netting of the wall, if it's not 10 inches high, can't create its own domain. But if it is 10 tefachim high, the walls and the roof create its own space within the sukkah. And therefore, the original opinion said it's disqualified and you cannot fulfill the mitzvah. But he, Rabba Barav Huna, disagreed. Why? Kiman, who does he hold like? Kirabi Yehuda. The Omar who said, Lo ati ohel arai umivatel ohel keva. The arai is a temporary, keva is a fixed. So the canopy is never placed permanently on top of the what? On top of the bed. It's done because there were mosquitoes in there. So a temporary abode cannot overpower the fact that you are in a permanent abode. What's the permanent abode for the Yontav of Sukkot? The Sukkah. So your temporary abode of the canopy cannot nullify and cancel out the fact that you are residing underneath the Schach, which is the permanent abode for the Yontav of Sukkot. Hence, he believes that even though the canopy itself is 10 tfachim high and has a roof effect, which creates its own little reshut, its own domain, you are yotzei the mitzvah. So some of the commentaries say that the reason why Rav told Rav Ada to sleep in the sukkah with the canopy, because at least according to somebody, he's being mekayim the mitzvah of sukkah. Even though the halacha is against him, everybody paskened against him. And the law in the conclusion of the Gemara is, you fulfill the mitzvah. The way the Rambam formulated the halacha is, you don't fulfill the mitzvah.
There's nothing negative.
There's nothing negative. Exactly. There is no downside, but at least, if God will say, you know what? Rav Adar, he said it's okay. So therefore, he didn't suggest to him, you know what? Go into the house. If you can get credit, according to somebody, no downside in doing so. That's what many people say. And that's also a hashkafic point. That even though halacha might be going, somebody, you know what, if you can accommodate this guy, try to accommodate this person. And that's done by certain distinct yeshiva groups. The Briska always felt like that. That even though the halacha is lenient according to the majority rule, I'm going to try to make the other guy happy by what? Taking the more stringent of, or coming up with a compromise that will work everybody all together. There's a famous example of that about Tkiyah Shofar. You ever hear in some shuls they blow 5 shvarim? Go to Bnei Yeshurun, they blow 5 shvarim, not 3, like all of the rest of the world. No, it's not a Bnei Yeshurun. It was the Rav. I'll tell you what happened. I'll just explain the debate, and I'll show you how it's illustrated by the Briska. There is the core mitzvah of Tkiyah Shofar is measured by how long a tekiah is. So Tosvot is of the opinion that a tekiah is the equivalent of 9 truot. Do, 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 do. Those are the truot. So 9 of those quick blasts equals 1 tekiah. That's what Tosfot says. And that's what everybody believes. So the trua has to be 9 short ones. The tkiya has to be 1 sound, but the equivalent of 9 breaths. And the shvarim are 3 times 3. Shvarim are a little longer than the trua, but less than the tkiya. So it's approximate 3 times 3. But the end number of all 3 notes, tkiya, shvarim, trua, has to equal 9. That's what Tosfos and almost everybody else says. Rashi believes the core number is 3, not 9. 3. 3 breaths. And when you blow what you and I would call a shvarim, what does Rashi call that? That's a tekiah already. Rashi's tekiah is 3 breaths. which is one of the three which we call a Shvarim. So according to Rashi, if Rashi were to walk in into every single shul in the world, he would say, none of you guys fulfilled the mitzvah of shofar. Because all you did was blow, tkiya, tkiya, do-do-do, trua. You didn't blow any shvarims. Because according to Rashi, a tkiya is 3 breaths long. So what's a shvarim? It's got to be less than that. But we don't blow that. So when Rashi would walk into Rinat, he would see a guy blew a tkiya, which was 9 breaths long, and then he blew 3 tkiyos, which were 3 breaths each. Because Rashi doesn't know of anything that's anything more than 3 breaths long is automatically a tkiya. So how does Rashi blow a shvarim? A shorter note than 3 breaths. Something 1.5 or 2. Toot, toot, toot. That's how Rashi would blow a shvarim. Make sure that it's less than 3 breaths. Because if it's 1 breath, that's a trua. If it's 2 breaths long, that could be a shvarim. 3 is already a tkiya. Right? That's what Rashi said. So the story goes that the Rav was 9 years old and he went to visit his grandfather in Brisk. The Rav lived in Russian Khaslavich. So his father was a Rav in a Lubavitch town. And he went to visit his grandfather in Brisk. And he came up with this idea, I'm going to make Rashi and Tosfos happy. Rashi and Tosfos. How? By blowing 1 long 9-breath tekiah, that satisfies Tosfos and Rashi, and blowing 5 2-note shvarims. 5 2-note shvarims. How many note shvarims would Rashi say you're supposed to blow? 3. I'm going to blow 3 of them. 3 times 2 is 6. 6 is fine. Anything longer than 3 is fine. So you blow doot for the trua, two breaths worth for the shvarim. But Tosfa says 3 times 2 is not enough. Because 3 times 2 is 6. And what's the unit according to Tosfos? It's got to be 9. So what do? You increase the frequency of the shvarims, each one being blown for only 2 breaths. 5 times 2 equals what? 10, which is more than 9. So when he was 9 years old, he came up with this compromise to make Rashi and Tosfos happy. Even though everybody in the history of the world blew like we blow shofar. And Reb Chaim was so delighted that his 9-year-old grandson came up with this idea to satisfy shofar according to Rashi and Tosfos. That Rosh Hashanah, he changed the practice in Brisk. And he blew 5 shvarims. When the Rav came to America, he was proud that his grandfather applauded him what he came up with at 9 years old. And he started blowing this system when he went to Boston. And then, when he gave the shiurim in YU, they started doing it in YU. And since the Rav is was the titular head of so many rabbis who became rabbis across America, Rabbi Gordon, when he was one of the early rabbis in Teaneck, in Bnei Yeshurun for who knows how many years, he decided he's going to follow his Rebbe. So somebody asked me when I started Reno, are we going to do that? I said, no. Because nobody will know what in the world's going on here. And I know exactly what the Rav said, but I never bring in the unusual opinions of the Rav if everybody's used to davening a particular way. And that's what he did. And that's what the Gemara answers according, that's what Rav suggested as well. I can make him, can fold the mitzvah according to him. Let's try to do, make him happy. Even though the halacha is not like that individual. Good. Let us move to page 3. Page 3. And this is the rush in the rush. Where am I? And it's in the middle of the page. I bracketed the thing, and then within that bracket, it says on the right there, the bracket, Katav b'sefer hamitzvot. It has been written in a book called Sefer HaMitzvot. Dafka lemigne, avo lemechal asur. The Sefer HaMitzvot wrote that when, this is talking about the case of the foul smell. What did the Gemara say he was allowed to do as a result of the foul smell?
Not
what?
Not be in the sukkah.
No, it didn't say not be.
Sleep.
Not sleep in the sukkah. So why did he emphasize not sleeping in the sukkah?
Because you're lying on the ground by the smell.
Okay, but he could have said it was a bed.
What? Excuse you from eating in the sukkah.
Ah, that's what the Sefer HaMitzvos writes. Dafka lemigni. The exemption is only to sleep. Avol lemeichal asur. But to eat out of the sukkah, if there is an unpleasant foul smell, that is prohibited. That's what this Sefer HaMitzvos wrote. So says the Magen Avram, v'lo mistaber. That's totally illogical. Diyoter mazik horeyach b'shas achila. When do you notice foul smell more,
disturb you.
When is it? When you're eating, when you're sleeping, when you finally fall asleep, the foul smell doesn't bother you much. So why would he be exempt only for sleeping and not for eating? V'nakat lemigne leravusa. Why did he mention only sleeping for a bigger chidush? Mishum dechamira shena meachila. Because sleeping in the sukkah is more serious than eating in the sukkah. Because there are no exemptions whatsoever from sleeping in the sukkah. Any time you want to sleep during Sukkot, whether it's to go shluffy at night or to take an afternoon nap for an hour on Yom Tov, that has to be in the sukkah. But eating has a built-in leniency. Under what circumstances are you obligated to be in the sukkah? Only if you're eating a meal. Or something with which we make a meal. Grain and bread. But eating a snack, you're allowed to eat a snack out of the sukkah. You're allowed to eat meat out of the sukkah. You shouldn't, but you're allowed to. You're allowed to eat, drink liquids out of the sukkah. So the chidush is that if there is a foul smell, certainly you don't have to eat in the sukkah. You don't even have to sleep in the sukkah. Eat, of course not. Because the smell is much more irritable when you're eating than when you're smelling. So therefore, under those circumstances, he used the sleeping illustration to say the bigger chidush. Not like the Sefer HaMitzvot writes that it's only sleeping but not eating. Eating, you must eat in the sukkah despite the foul smell. Says the Magen Aron, quite the contrary. You certainly are exempt from eating because there are lots of contingencies during which you're allowed to eat out of the sukkah. As I just said, if you're not eating grain or bread, you can eat out of the sukkah. And even if you're eating grain, if you don't eat enough to make what we call establish a meal, you're allowed to eat even a cookie out of the sukkah, as long as it's only a snack. Snacks don't depend upon us, because some of us can eat a whole pack of Drakes, and call that a snack. Even though it's 8 ringdings or something like that. It's still a snack. So the halacha has determined what constitutes a snack and a real meal. But if you're eating the quantity of a snack, everybody says you're allowed to eat out of the sukkah. So sukkah, sleeping, has no contingencies when you're allowed to sleep out of the sukkah. Not allowed to. So he said, when there is a foul smell, of course you don't have to eat in the sukkah. But you even don't have to sleep in the sukkah. That's the way he argues with the Sefer HaMitzvot. With the Sefer HaMitzvot. Let's move on.
Why do some people so carefully read anything?
Because the Rambam writes, anybody who is careful not even to drink a glezel of aser out of the sukkah, harei ze mishubach. You are to be praised if you are machmir not to eat anything out of the sukkah.
Gotcha.
Yes. Yeah. Now, you're all troubled, and Tova articulated it, why in the world is there such a halacha that somebody who is uncomfortable, agitated, is exempt from the mitzvah of sukkah? Why is it as such? Why? It's got a headache, exactly. So the standard answer is found on page 5 in the name of the Ritva. It's in the second line. I'll get back to the first two lines if I have a little more time. In the second line of that bracketed thing, in the middle, there's a comma after the word who. It says, ulikaman nami. Later on in the Gemara, darshinan, the Gemara makes a drash, teshvu ke'en taduru. The Torah uses the expression, basukot teshvu shivat yamim. There is no other way to formulate that mitzvah. What does it mean? You shall dwell in a sukkah for 7 days. Basukot teshvu shivat yamim. I cannot think of another way of how the Torah could have put us into the sukkah without saying those words. How else would you say, live in the sukkah for 7 days, unless you say basukot teshvu shivat yamim? So if that is the simple meaning of the text, and the text is absolutely imperative to convey to us what is the mitzvah, you can't have a drash on that particular pasuk. What does a drash mean? Either a midrash agadah, which you read about in Rashi's stories, these agadic stories, and there is midrash halacha. These midrashim have to have something in the text that serves as a spark to say, this is extra, this could have been said in 5 words instead of 6 words. Then you use that extra word to serve as the basis of halacha. I can't think of an extra half a letter that the Torah could have omitted or substituted from basukot teshvu shivat yamin. Because without any of those words, I have no idea what you're talking about. What is it going to say? Basukot shivat yamin? Basukot what? What do you do? Teshvu, without the word basukot? Shivat yamin, what does it mean? For 2 minutes? Every word in that phrase is absolutely indispensable. But yet, the Gemara darshins, ke'ein taduru, dwell in the sukkah like you reside in the house. Teshvu ke'ein taduru. Remember that phrase. I'm going to ask you next week, as soon as you walk in, what does that phrase mean? Bas teshvu ke'ein taduru. Live, dwell in the sukkah the way you reside in the house. So, in a positive vein, it means not just to eat in the sukkah. What do you do in your house? You watch television. You do your exercise. Everything's be done in the sukkah. So you bring, if you have a big enough sukkah, you bring your treadmill. And you do your laps in the sukkah, or walk around the table 500 times. Do your exercises. The Gemara talks about litayel, to take a hike, walk around the sukkah, in the sukkah, in the sukkah. So teshu kedur means Just imagine that you're moving out of your house for 7 days and moving into a tent. That's what you're going camping for 7 days.
That's why we put the couch in the second.
That's good. Okay.
The couch is always in the second. After the meal, my husband does not want people going inside to read or book or anything. There's a rug, there's a couch, and there's chairs.
Kol hakavod. Kol hakavod.
So it's raining, you have to cover it.
Kol hakavod. Don't.
How big is your sukkah?
It's big.
Good. That's good. That's what the halacha wants from us.
And if you want to take your 1 minute nap, then you need a couch to do your.
That's it. Excellent. I must say that sleeping in the sukkah has made a real revival.
Yes.
In our days. Mm-hmm. Used to be hardly anyone ever. Today, a lot of my grandchildren, but a lot of my grandchildren are sleeping in the sukkah all the time.
Never sleep in the house.
What?
Right?
That's great. Unbelievable. Good. However, Teishvu Ke'ein Toduru also has the implication to generate our halacha. Let's assume you're sitting in your house and one room happens to be a lot of mosquitoes. Are you staying in that room? No, you're going to go to another room where there are, when there is netting on the wall, on the windows, not a broken screen like we all have in the bungalow colonies, a screen that works. And as a result, in the sukkah, you do the same thing. If the room which you are living in has mosquitoes, you go into a different room. Well, you can't go into a different sukkah, so you go back into the house. If it's raining, if you have a leak in your roof, and it's raining into the room, you're not going to eat in the dining room if that's where the leak is. Same thing if it's raining in the sukkah. You go into a different room. So the entire heter is based on the inference teishvu ke'ein toduru. In its positive sense, it means do everything in the sukkah as you are residing in the house. That's the primary intention of that phrase. But its side effect is that if there is something that I would not be able to do in my house, because there's a foul smell, because I have a bad headache and I can't sit in the dining room, I gotta lie down. Well, I can't, it's hard to sleep in the sukkah where it's a lot of noise and so on and so forth. I want to go where it's quiet and it's dark because I don't want to get, because I can't, I have such a terrible headache. So therefore, that's the primary explanation. Teishvu ke'ein toduru. Live in your sukkah in the exact same fashion in which you live in your house. Teishvu ke'ein toduru. Yes.
What the ke'ein? What is the word ke'ein?
Like, similarly. The word ke'ein. With an ayin. Look, it's right there. It's right there. Teishvu ke'ein toduru. Ke'ein. Right there. Ke'ein.
How does ein mean that?
In Aramaic. Ke'ein is Aramaic. It's domeh.
It's kamo.
Domeh.
It's not Hebrew.
Right.
And toduru?
What?
Tadir.
Toduru. Ladur is to dwell. Dira is a residence. Teishvu ke'ein toduru. Yeah. So that is the primary way of understanding it. Based on Teishvu ke'ein toduru. And this Teishvu Ke'ein Toduru has so many applications, not only limited to the illustrations which I gave you tonight, It also touches upon some of the halachot that I mentioned earlier. If you would have to build your house, would you ever build it in a place where there's a wind tunnel? Would you ever do that? Of course not. Why would you want to build it where there's a wind tunnel? So you can't build your sukkah there either. So Teishvu Ke'ein Toduru is not only modifying our mitzvah that whether you are obligated or not obligated to dwell in the sukkah, it touches upon the kashrut of the sukkah itself. The kashrut of the sukkah itself. You have to create an environment which would be the same environment that I would build my house. I would never build my house in a place which is exposed to a lot of wind. I would never build my house in a place where there are lots of bees all the time. Because as soon as I open up the door, what's going to happen? The bees are going to come in. So if you build your house in such an area, even if you want to fulfill the mitzvah, here comes the chidush, you're not going to fulfill the mitzvah. If I say, you know what? I don't care about those bees. You know why I'm not going to fulfill the mitzvah? Because the sukkah is disqualified. Because most people would never build a house where there are swarms of bees floating around. So if most people wouldn't build their house there, you and I can't build our sukkah there. Even though I want to eat there. But the disqualification is not in my fulfillment of the mitzvah, but it's a disqualification in the kashrut, the eligibility of the sukkah. So if you build a sukkah in a wind tunnel, and even though I want to say, you know, I'm not cold, I can expose to, well, tonight's winds outside, I can sit outside in the sukkah. Okay, too bad. You're not going to be yotze the mitzvah. Because the sukkah objectively has to meet the standards of most human beings. Not the idiosyncrasies of one person who's, I can tolerate that cold. That doesn't matter. Yeah.
But it's like in today's times, most of us build our sukkah behind our house, in front of our house. So this almost doesn't really apply because we built our house there. That's where we live. So of course our sukkah.
Correct. But it's in a situation, just use your imagination. You're building it not next door to your house, right? Not behind the house, which is sheltered, but you're going to build your sukkah in Central Park. Wide open to you know, to the elements. You know, that would disqualify the sukkah. Yeah.
So why don't we take it to a further level? So if I had a room in my house that was very cold and it was wintertime, I wouldn't necessarily leave that room. I would put a heater in that room. So why am I not obligated to not say, okay, my sukkah gets too cold, I can leave. Good. My sukkah gets too cold, I should have a heater.
There are some people who do that. Mm-hmm. There are some who do that.
That
yes.
Should be your obligation.
That should correct. Correct. Some people find it a little difficult to put a heater in the sukkah, but others do. I've seen heaters put into the sukkah. Haven't seen an air conditioner yet, but I have seen heaters in a sukkah. Yes, yes. All right, we'll stop here and continue next Devach. I want to thank everybody for braving the weather and coming. Somebody called me and said, am I going to cancel? Should I cancel? You know, somebody said, I can't come. I don't want to take
a...
What? No, we are not in Chicago. In Chicago, I probably would have canceled.